You're listening to WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro here on this beautiful Tuesday morning. It's indeed beautiful because it's not snowing. It's cold, but it's not snowing.
It'll anyway, be beautiful then, too.
Yes. And freedom of expression is essential to a free society, and don't you all forget it. This is, as I said, WCOM at 103.5 FM, and it is, ta-da!
Speakeasy time.
Claudio Speakeasy.
And radio theater coming up.
Absolutely. Your host, Claudio, Renaissance man and bard of WCOM, has opened the doors of the speakeasy to invite you all to come as you are. Find a seat, get comfortable. You can be wearing your red Santa hat or not.
Or nothing at all.
This is a place where you're always welcome and can always expect the very best. Hello.
Hello, hello, hello. And we've got an old friend on board today whom we'll get to in a bit, but you can say good morning. That's Bob Crowley.
Good morning.
Historian and also president of the Apex Arts Council. And we're actually going to take the show in a bit of an unusual direction a little later on today once we've made a few acknowledgments, and that would be the matter of graveyards.
Now, wouldn't that actually, for this show, be a usual direction since we do the unusual normally?
Oh, be quiet. What I do want to get into is remind everybody out there that we're doing a WCOM fundraiser. So this is one of the promos. WCOM Community Radio is heard at 103.5 FM and on the internet at WCOMFM.org. We are conducting an on-the-air membership fundraising drive to keep your voice in the community alive and active. WCOM is asking you to become a WCOM member by making a tax-deductible recurring donation to the station on our website, WCOMFM.org. Or mail a check to WCOM 208 East Main Street, Carrboro, North Carolina 27510. Help keep the most innovative and diverse radio station in the Triangle strong. Community radio only exists with support of listeners like you. We need you, so keep us in mind. And on that note, I very quickly want to mention somebody that does take care of us, and that is at least Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater. That is the Historic Carolina Theater, who is our underwriter and has been very loyal for a number of years now. Mm-hmm. I want to mention that, and beyond that, we certainly need you, the listening audience, as well.
And the Carolina Theater is an historic nonprofit performing arts complex located at 309 West Morgan Street, Durham, North Carolina. And their website is www.carolinatheater.org, and that's theater spelt with an R-E, not an E-R.
That's right, and I just had the wonderful pleasure of stage managing George Winston on the 15th. Wonderful show.
So,
why don't you expound for a moment on the WCOM?
Well, community radio is I think, and our volunteers here believe, and I believe that all you people out there believe, that community radio is an important asset to the community. We provide a service by reflecting the interests and the concerns of our local community.
And we are not corporate speak.
Right. And we also provide a means, access, and training for people to come in and do a show like Claudio's Speakeasy or all our other great shows we have on Talk of Hope, our great music shows like Saturday Morning Music Hall and Jerry Villemain on Sundays with his Blue Rock Radio. And I can go on.
Carolina
Bookbeat, of course, on Monday mornings. And the fact is that it's a service, it's part of this community, and we are bringing Carrboro and the talents and abilities of Carrboro around the world because we are webcast. We're streamed 24/7 around the globe, and on our Facebook page, if we get hits from people in something, the last count was like 27 different countries. That's from Dubai to Japan to Germany.
It's amazing who listens.
To Argentina, I mean.
Or catches the podcasts. Yeah.
Like they catch the show. They stream it. But it's all Carrboro, so, and Chapel Hill. I have to add that. The station is located here in Carrboro, but we are Chapel Hill, Carrboro. So
we're right next to the cat's cradle.
It is such a, I mean, if you get down to, if you can't make a $10 a month donation, if you can put $5 in a check for $5 and send it in the mail, that's great.
Any amount will do.
But a recurring donation really gives us a little sense of security. I mean, nobody here gets paid anything.
Right.
Every bit goes to paying electricity, rent, utilities, license fees, keeping up the equipment. That's where the money goes. Mm-hmm. And we operate on a phenomenally tiny budget.
No, we're all doing it for the love of doing it.
Right. So, you know, for a lot of people, it's still pocket change. I know times are rough, but mm-hmm. $10 a month is $2.50 a week, and that's what, 36 cents maybe?
Coffee's going to cost you more.
Or something like, absolutely. That you can just go online, WCOMFM.org, and hit that Donate Now button, and whatever it is you can give. And again, if you can't do that, send us your goodwill. You can come and volunteer. This is your community radio station, folks.
Indeed.
And we're only here because of you and because of people who believe very firmly that freedom of expression is essential to
And this is us tooting our horn to remind you that we need your help. And on that note,
yes.
I want to give them a little something Christmassy.
Yes.
Since by the time we do the next show, Christmas will be have come and gone. So this is a little Merry Christmas to everyone. Once
Maybe.
We get it up and running, well done.
Anything that Santa would bring could never compare with you. I want you for Christmas. You're a pet that money can't get, and nothing but you will do. Oh, I just wrote a letter, and if my wish comes true, you can bet by Jimmy he'll come down the chimney with a bag full of you. I want you for Christmas. If only Santa does what he should, I'm knocking on wood for him to make good. Christmas morning, baby, I only want you. You know, Christmas will soon be here. Mm-hmm. And that's one time of the year it's proper to plan a stocking for Santa, hoping that he'll appear on that pleasant day when presents are given away. Oh, I just want one gift on December 25th. I want you for Christmas. I don't want a diamond or pearl, a duke or an earl, won't you? No, I want you for Christmas. I'd give up a brand new dress for one caress from you. Oh, I just wrote a letter, and if my wish comes true, you can bet by Jimmy he'll come down the chimney with a bag full of poo-poo-bee-doo. Oh, I want you for Christmas. I'm old enough to know what I want. Oh, I want what I want. I'll get what I want. Christmas morning, baby, I only want you. The chimney with a bag full of boop-boop-bee-doo. Oh, I'm old enough to know what I want. Oh, I'll get what I want. I want what I want. Christmas morning, baby, I only want you, tootsie-wootsie. I only want you, poopsie-wootsie. I only want you.
And that was our very own Audrey in song.
You never sounded better, darling.
Oh, that's I've been practicing all week.
I wanted to get you with that one.
You certainly did.
Bob, you can actually fill us in on the history of that.
That's actually a 71-year-old recording of Mae Questel, who was one of the voices of Betty Boop, of course.
Yes,
it had that
right.
flavor.
1930.
That was great.
Well, to go in a more grave direction, I'm going to start the conversation by reading a few tombstones here. I've got a book, Tombstones and the Tales They Tell, written by Henry King, who explored North Carolina for unusual tombstones. And here come after that, we're going to go into the whole graveyard conversation from end to end and pick it apart. We'll try not to dig up any bones. Here's a tombstone. Ma loved Pa, Pa loved women. Ma found Pa with one in swimming. Here lies Pa.
No doubt.
Here lies John O'Day. He lived the life of Riley while Riley was away.
I think I knew him.
And this one I actually like. She left a legacy of laughter. These are all about North Carolina. I'm not gonna.
They're all North Carolina tombstones?
Yes, they are.
All right. Tar Heel Tombstone. I see the copy of the title of the book.
Praises on tombstones. This is actually on a tombstone. Praises on tombstones are but idly spent. A man's good name is his best monument. Good point. Here's one. By Tom Lasseter would have been the perfect neighbor for Mrs. Mary LeFavor. She died in 1797 and was buried in Pine Grove Cemetery on U.S. Highway 77 at Topsfield, Mass. Her tombstone reads, "Reader, pass on, ne'er waste your time on bad biography or bitter rhyme. For what I am, this umbrous clay ensures, and what I was is no affair of yours."
Okay.
Telling him off even at the grave.
Mm-hmm. I've got to find out what you're going to put on your tombstone.
Here lies my most exaggerated state. Mm. I think I'll leave it at that. I like this one. To the memory of Richard Richards, who by gangrene lost first a toe, afterwards a leg, and lastly his life on the 7th of April in 1656. Ah, cruel death, to make three meals of one, to taste and taste till all was gone. But know then, tyrant, when the trumpet shall call, he'll find his feet and stand when thou shall fall. Mm. Oh, death, where is thy sting? Comes to mind. And I've got a couple more before we can. Oh, I like this one. Gone fishing.
Okay.
Some people just don't give up.
Yep.
I saw one recently, something like, he's gone out for coffee.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to see this.
There was one also I had read some time about, a long time ago, and I don't remember the whole thing, but it was basically my wife was a scold, and here she lies, and please, friend, walk softly as you go by, lest she wake up and start talking.
Yes. What was this, the true story that happened years ago about some guy walking through the graveyard late at night and falling into an open grave. And he kept jumping up, trying to grab a corner, but it had sort of been moist and rained a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. And just couldn't reach up there to get out of the grave. And finally, an old hobo that had fallen in much earlier, who was quite relaxed down there, taps him on the shoulder and says, "You're not going to make it." He did.
Yeah, that'd get me to jump, too.
Yes. And then finally, lastly, the one I want to read. "Do not stand by this stone and weep. I am not dead. I'm only asleep. When you awake in the morning rush, do not grieve, but hear the hush. I feel the gentle winds that blow and make clear footprints in the snow. I see the hawks all soaring high and watch the duck go sailing by. I see the sunshine that ripens grain and feel the gentle autumn rain. I watch the birds in graceful flight and see the twinkling stars at night. I feel the restless roanokes flow, but have gone to where the wild geese go. I leave a ripple at the river's bend and a legacy to my kids and kin. Don't stand at my grave and cry. I am not there and did not die."
And that must have been a mighty big tombstone.
And rather expensive, I would think, too. Back in those days, it wasn't cheap to get those engravings. Right. They were done by hand, right?
Uh-huh. I think they still are.
I only want four words.
Well, we're talking 1700s here, thank you?
I'm saying today, how are they done?
Aren't they? I would think everything today is machinated somehow.
It's an acid wash. You put a mask over it. There's a blocking solution. You pour some acid. It etches the stone and wash it off, and that's it. You're ready
so
to go.
So you're not doing it with hammer and chisel anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you can still have that done.
Right.
And sometimes it, once the letters are etched, they'll chip at them to make it look that way. But generally, it's an acid wash that's
interesting
that does it now. It's fascinating ways when you start looking at gravestones and how they were placed. As I say, I only want four words on mine. Just says he had other plans.
Well, if I was going to have a gravestone, which I'm not, because
no, I don't plan it either.
I go with the Viking funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Want an Irish wake and a Viking funeral.
Works for me.
In other words, the wake, the old tradition was you kept the beer cold with the ice that was keeping the corpse from decaying while you had your wake.
Yes. The night that Patty Murphy died.
You have the party and then, you know, put the body on a ship, you push it out into the water and you shoot flaming arrows at the ship.
That's
the Viking funeral. But I'm not going to ask my kids and kith and kin to try to figure out where they might be allowed to do that. So we'll just do the cremation. But if I was going to have anything, I would just say she smiled.
Mm-hmm. I like that. As a matter of fact, I was watching Victor Borge the other night, the comedian.
Yes, yes.
And one of his favorite lines is, the shortest distance between people is a smile.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I like
that.
And my choice, as far as the death thing goes, is burial at sea, if otherwise ashes. I see no point. I personally am not a supporter of graveyards. I think we need that space for the living.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, you could. This is. I don't want to really offend anyone out there, because there are people for whom a monument of some sort is important to them emotionally.
It I can appreciate
them emotional
that. Yes.
Support, and I can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But having grown up in New York City and how crammed everybody was, you know, in these huge tenements and huge apartment buildings, and they were so, everybody wanted to live on Manhattan Island or in, you know, the five boroughs. To have this expansive space just taken up by bodies seemed kind of absurd to me.
And also all these Cadillac coffins we put people in. This one's made of copper, that one's made of some strange metal.
Yeah.
Nothing decomposes down there, and it leaches into the water tables. And so I'm not going to go on about this forever, and I'm not trying to make a green statement here, but there's just it makes no good sense to me that we don't put things back in the earth to decompose and become earth again.
Well, it's the emotional, it's for the living, you know, that have these, feel the need for these things.
The dead have an awful lot of real estate.
Yeah, they do. I mean, you talked about New York City, up by the Elmhurst tanks on the Long Island Expressway. Mm-hmm. That's nothing but a huge cemetery interspersed with industrial parks and all kinds of nonsense out there.
Part of the thing, of course, is, I mean, it is important for health reasons that certain things are done with the body.
So I agree.
Don't have, you know, spreading of diseases and so on and so forth. But
it's amazing, though.
You know, a big plaque somewhere, you know, put names on walls or something like that, but ground spaces.
Like we've done for the soldiers.
Well, it's amazing, though, how recent most of these customs are. If you go back in history, bodies were left to decompose. Everybody remembers, you know, they've seen cowboy movies, and you've got this wooden frame, and the Indians put up there to decompose.
Well, they set them on fire.
Some
as well.
Did, but others just left them there to decompose.
For the birds,
and then when you take the bones away, well, that's not the only society that did that. If you go back to Roman times in Palestine, that was the Jewish custom, the ossuary. You put the body in this stone box, and you left it there to decompose. And then you took the bones and you put them in a smaller box to do the actual burial, perhaps even a year later. So there's lots and lots of these things. Even my favorite one is, you know, everybody puts flowers on the grave. I mean, everybody puts – why do we do that? Well, It's probably the oldest burial custom ever, because it dates back 40,000 years. There have been Neanderthal graves found with flowers thrown on top of
them. But again, why?
Well, maybe it was for the smell.
That's what I was just thinking. They put sweet smell on top of it.
Maybe it was just for pretty, you know. Here, this is my last present to you, a nice pretty flower. Mm-hmm. Well, there's some conjecture in a lot of different ways as to what it did, but the whole idea was that death was to ancient peoples was something not to be understood. They know what sleeping was, but, you know, death seemed more like just a long sleep. Mm-hmm. So what do you do with the body? It starts to decompose. Well, you don't want it torn apart by animals, so you bury it. And that was the origin of it. And then that became more and more and more ingrained that, well, you had to bury it. Why? Because that's the way we do things. Why? Well, mm-hmm. Nobody really knows exactly what that was about. There are traditions within various religions that insist the body must be kept together for the resurrection. So that when, you know, you're totally intact, some religions and beliefs even go so far as to say, well, if you lose a limb, you must preserve that to be buried with you later. Oh,
there's
later.
Quite a bit of history on that, yeah.
Yeah, but it really, if you look at the preservation idea, that just goes back as far as the ancient, I mean really ancient Egyptians, back before the first dynasty. A lot of the bodies were left in the desert, and the desert being dry would essentially mummify them. And later generations learned how to mummify or preserve a body, and that's where that carried through. Well, when the Israelites were in captivity, if you will, in Egypt, they learned that, and they carried that forward into ancient Judaism.
I want my mum.
Yeah. It came into...
I swear you're going to get a hit in the knee there.
Yeah. Where's my mummy?
And then there was Monty Python.
Oh, yeah.
Went that far back, so... Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly. But and that carried through from Judaism into Christian traditions. If you really look at it, a lot of those traditions just go back to ancient Egypt. That was part of the Egyptian religion, and it just carried forward from there. But
you were telling me some interesting things on the traditions of embalming.
Well, yeah, embalming, you know, everybody just assumes that we must do embalming. But embalming as we know it today really only dates to the American Civil War. Before that, most people were just put into a pine box and dropped in a hole, and you threw some dirt on and said, okay, good luck. We'll see you next time around. But because of the battles being fought so far from home, many people wanted the body brought back home. I mean, a soldier killed in Mississippi would want to be buried back in Massachusetts where he's from. Well, you can't take an unembalmed body that far at the speeds of transport.
So that's why it came about.
So the embalmers had a field day, and they just embalmed everything. There are even states now I believe New Jersey's one. I'm not 100% sure, but there are states that even if the body is to be cremated, require it to be embalmed first.
That makes no sense to me.
Of course it doesn't. It's, you know, just somebody who had a good lobbyist, I guess, and got the law fixed that
way. They want to see if he swallowed a gold tooth or something?
Well, you know, I was talking to someone recently about that as I was looking for extra things to throw into this show, and they said, well, they had an ancient aunt who insisted that she wanted to be cremated, but she wanted to be embalmed first, and they asked her why. So I want to make sure I'm dead.
Well, that's where I heard it when I was very, very, very young. I would hear these horror stories about people who were in some kind of a coma.
Or some of the old coffins, too, where you saw scratch marks later on. Yeah,
you know, that people might have been buried before alive. They were dead.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I was told, you know, when I was, 7 years old or something like that, that's why you embalmed. You wanted to make sure they were dead.
Well, that's one reason, but you mentioned that. There were even coffins made where they had a little bell tower on the coffin, and they would put a string in the dead person's hand, so if they woke up in there, they could ring the bell and
that's
say,
right.
Hey, let me out.
Didn't Houdini do that?
He may have, but there was actually...
I hear stories where Houdini actually had that set up, and his widow or whatever was... listening would go and listen for that bell.
Just in
or
case.
Something.
Yeah, there were
all the details.
There's even British cemeteries where they found pipes down to the coffin to above ground with a flap on the top so you could yell or holler or ring a bell or something like that and maybe get some air through the pipe. Mm-hmm. And there are also tales of graveyard keepers who would hear that and say, I don't want to go through this, and they just put a stone on top of the flap and too bad.
Oh, great. No murderous intent here.
I'd be happy to know that, you know, if I'm I'm going to be, have my my remains taken care of or going to go into the crematorium or whatever, that I will be dead first.
That's why I figure burial at sea. You know, if I do wake up down there, it's not going to be for long. Well, so there'll be some great white going, hey, winking at me, and boom, there it is.
Well, what's one of the great things about being cremated, too, because that way you're absolutely sure.
Yes, absolutely certain. Yes.
That's an awful big extent to go to, you know. There are quicker ways to make sure of that.
Yeah, but nowadays we are relatively certain. Mm-hmm. We have machines that'll test that and so on.
Exactly.
Doesn't usually slip.
That boy ain't moved muscle in 3 days. I know he's dead.
But there's some fascinating things and customs around that. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Sin Eater. The Sin Eater was an ancient custom.
That, must have been a fat fella.
Yeah.
Reminds me of a children's book I've read recently. Actually.
This is a custom.
I don't think it was the Cat in the Hat.
No, it was
another cat altogether.
It was a dream eater, and it was.
But this custom comes at least to the Appalachians from England and primarily Wales and Celtic tradition, where as someone was dying and you wanted to absolve them from sin, you hired a sin eater. And you would put some bread on the dying person's or the body, if they had passed away already, on their chest for a day or so. And then this gentleman usually would show up and you'd give him some water and he'd pick up the bread and from the corpse and eat it. And that would, he would, by doing that, he was symbolically taking along on board him the sins of that person's life. And therefore, they would pass directly into heaven.
So a Catholic priest and toast, this would not work.
Now, that was part of it, but you would hire the sin eater. Now that actually harks back to,
and they got paid for doing this.
Yeah, they get usually it was a transient, a vagrant, or somebody like that. And
they had cramps for days.
Yeah, the sin eater would come in and
moldy old bread or something.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
blame it on the baker.
Yes,
it's hey, they got a meal out of it. What the heck, you know? But it's a very strange custom. But it really, to me, it harks back to ancient Jewish tradition of the scapegoat. The scapegoat was actually a goat, an actual goat that would be brought to a ceremony in the temple once a year, and the priest would lay on hands and transfer all the sins of the congregation
to
the
goat. Is this where the term came from?
Yeah. And the scapegoat then was led out of the wilderness and left to fend for itself, and all the sins went away.
Just to let you folks know, you're listening to Bob Crowley. He's a historian. I'm in the studio with my co-host Audrey Layden, and this is Claudio of Claudio's Speakeasy and Radio Theater here on WCOM 103.5 FM, a place we hope that you will support financially whenever you can, just to throw that plug in there. Back to Bob.
Yes.
I'm bringing you the holiday cheer via the graveyards.
Yes. Well, think of it as rising above that.
Yeah, well, take whatever you would have spent on embalming and send it to WCOM.
Hey, my humor's starting to get to you.
We could do that, but yes. that whole thing, the scapegoat, yeah, that's where it came from. You transferred.
Interesting. I was wondering about that one.
Yeah, and you find that actually in the Bible if you want to actually read.
Well, that does sound like those old biblical traditions where even at exorcisms they would cast demon into swine.
Right.
Yeah. That type of ritual.
Oh, the ancient traditions. Some of my favorites actually come from it would be cultural traditions of the family graveyards around this area. To expand a little bit about that, one of the things that I've learned to find a family graveyard is to look for two trees very close together, or a tree with a split trunk, where either a shelf has been put up between the two trees or between the two trunks. And you see that every once in a while in the woods you'll pass, and you can see where somebody had nailed a board up there as a shelf.
And what would that be?
Well, the reason for it was that every year, once a year, the family would gather and clean the graveyard, and that's where they put out the food so that everybody could have lunch. While they were doing, they would clean up the graveyard. The other thing to look for is that in tombstones, you really don't have in this area etched tombstones until about 1800, 1810. Prior to that, they would just take an ordinary flat stone that they would find in the area and set it up. It was always set up at the head of the grave. No markings, no etchings, no scratchings, no nothing. Well, how do you know who's there? Mm-hmm. Well, the way the tradition was that after the graveyard had been cleaned and everybody had lunch, someone in the family, usually an older person, had been tasked with remembering who was in each grave.
Yes, I'm aware of that tradition.
And they would then lead the family on a tour, and they would say, that's Aunt Minnie and that's Cousin Joe and so mm-hmm. on, and let them know. Well, there were two people in that group who were tasked with learning all of that. So when the person giving the lecture passed on, mm-hmm. then it would be their turn.
And allow me to interject something there, because going back to old Germany, where yep. some of my family graves are, when they take out the bones of a former generation and put in the bones of the new generation, mm-hmm. that person would have to know of several people that were in that coffin
right.
or used that coffin.
Right.
So they it's the, recycling.
There's
the
a
coffins.
Tradition of removing removing only the bones.
Right.
Yeah.
And then what do they do with the
and
bones?
And then I think the bones are put then turned to ash, possibly.
Okay.
And somehow maintained in a memoriam.
Well, very interesting.
Yeah.
Now there's a way of
But they do
space.
Remove the bones and make room for the new. But
reuse that, and recycle.
Yeah.
That actually goes back to what I had said earlier about the ossuary.
And that is mm-hmm. old Germany.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was old Palestine and old Native American and a lot of
I
cultures.
I still like the old
that.
Vikings.
Well, yes. Yeah.
Send them out to sea and set the ship on fire.
Yeah, yeah. Send them to Valhalla. With
Ash not, yes. want not, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you could
oh,
say
you're
that.
You're really asking for it.
Yes, I am. Rather unusual movie.
He's on a roll.
I haven't had my
morning.
Grand Marnier this morning.
The last piece of this with the local family graveyards is to remember that the headstone, the larger stone was at the head. Sometimes it was a footstone, but usually there's only a headstone. But that always was placed so that the body faced east. That is, the feet were pointing toward the east. And the reason for
feng shui?
That, well, in a way, yeah. Yeah, you get kind of feng shui. But when the resurrection came.
Glad you didn't say sushi.
And Christ would rise up out of Jerusalem, then the bodies would all sit up in the resurrection. They would be facing Jerusalem.
Ah, okay.
If, however, you ever find a grave oriented north and south, that's a witch.
Whoa. Oh, yes, I see.
That's a witch. And that's interesting. I've learned a lot of this stuff because I've worked with the Chatham County Historical Association, and there's only been one witch grave found in all of Chatham County.
Wow.
And is that the case?
Yeah, yeah. There's been five found in Wake County, if that tells you anything.
Hmm.
And I'm sorry, Wake County, but, you know, you got the monopoly.
Isn't
but
that interesting?
But that's, if you ever find a north-south grave, an ancient grave around here, that's a witch.
Is that anywhere near New Hope Creek?
Could be. Uh-huh. Could be. Might be actually be near Moncure.
Now, rising above the graves for a moment, you had something that you wanted to plug, an art event that's coming up next
right.
year.
Oh, right. Well, we probably should do that.
I'm giving you permission.
You're giving me permission. Oh, my God.
There you go. You've been permitted.
Get it in writing.
Well, as you know, besides being a bit of a historian and a lot of other things here, friend of Claudio, I like to think of myself, which is a task in and of itself.
I cannot confirm this.
Well, I'm also president of the Apex Arts Council, and we have what probably is going to be the biggest art show we've ever undertaken to do next April, April 21st. It will be at the Clower Family Vineyards in Apex.
Now, when you say the biggest art show ever undertaken, you mean as far as Apex goes?
As far as Apex goes, yeah. There's been a lot bigger.
There's been some big ones out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to do this is being called the Artist for Animals Fair, and this is going to be one heck of a show. The reason for Artist for Animals, well, we'll get to that right away.
I signed up as an animal.
Yeah, he's going to do his animal act out there. We are going to take half the profits of the show, and they will be divided among three animal rescue groups. We're still working on which groups
like
they will be, but they will be there. And we are going to do one heck of a show. Normally, you go to one of these shows, and there's a bunch of tents and a bunch of painters and photographers and sculptors and maybe some high-level craft people, and we will have that. And I got more room than I've ever had to be able to do that. But I say, you know, we got this room. Let's really do it up. So we have an area already picked out where we're going to put up a bandstand, and we are going to have live music of all types all day. Everything from hard rock to country to a chamber music or group, and even an opera singer come out. In another area, we'll have another stage where we'll have poets, including the great Claudio, and writers. That's me. And probably Audrey, maybe we can get her to come out.
I could do that.
Yeah.
It's down the road a bit. I don't know if she travels that far.
Well, we'll work it out. But we'll have them there reading and signing books. And another area, there's a little pond where we're going to set up a dance floor. And I've got a ballet company in. And by the pond, they're going to do pieces from Swan Lake and then some modern dance. And inside the barrel room.
If they get attacked by geese, we take no responsibility.
That's right. Inside the barrel room, we'll have independent film running all day. And not the same film. It'll be changed. And yes, all sorts of things. So. The idea is we're going to cram as many different disciplines of art as possible into a single day to attract as many people as possible there. We have the Vintner's Art, too, so you can taste and buy wine and listen to the music and watch the ballet and hear a poem and buy a painting. Well, we got to tell the animals this. Well, luckily, Chloe has started already. They have three pet beef cattle. These are not for eating. These are pets. This is Daisy, Buttercup, and M&M, and they will be there. We have a horse rescue group bringing us six horses, including two miniatures. We have a kitty cat and puppy rescue group that's going to bring kitty cats and puppies for adoption. And I also have promises. I don't know if we'll get them all, but I have promises from people who are going to bring me goats, sheep, rabbits, ferrets, chickens.
Some rumor about a tiger, but I think that transformed into something else.
We're going to get all kinds of them, but the Carolina Tiger Rescue in Pittsburgh is coming. They will not bring a tiger because those are not portable animals, but they're going to bring their transport van so you can see what it takes to move a live tiger around, and you can probably get a picture of you inside it if you want.
We may not let you back out.
Yeah. No, that's you. We'll put you in there. And I've
you
been,
said you volunteered as an animal.
Well, that's true. I did.
I've even talked to a raptor rescue group. They do hawks and eagles and owls, and they want to do falconry demonstrations in the vineyards.
That would be fascinating.
That would be cool.
Oh, yeah. So there's going to be one heck of a show. One day.
We can tell them to pick on one of the ballerinas. You know?
Yeah, that's it. We'll be there the 21st of April. That's a Saturday. It's 2 weeks before Peak Fest, so it'll give you a chance to get that out.
You will explain what Peak Fest is, Lucy.
Peak Fest is the big block party in Apex every year. We shut the street down in downtown and have one heck of a time. But if you're interested in Artists for Animals in any way, shape, or form, go to the Apex Arts Council website, look under events, and you'll see it, and you'll see all kinds of detail. If you're an artist, they'll tell you how to get out there, what it's going to cost. If you just want to come and see it, they'll tell you a lot more detail there. And that's our website, which is www.apexartscouncil.org. Real simple.
And that's that. Good.
That's a lot of work you've put into getting this thing together and actually making it happen.
I have a team of 14 managers working on this right
now.
I
would imagine.
Yeah, it's something else.
That's quite an undertaking.
Yeah, but it's going to be fun, too. And we're going to...
Should be memorable.
Actually,
once accomplished.
I've been, I don't know if it'll happen, but I have a friend who has a saddle-broken Percheron. You know what Percheron? It's a horse. Mm-hmm. It's a huge draft horse.
Oh,
but it's
my
broken to the saddle. And anyone who knows me knows I need a large horse.
Like one of those Budweiser's
yeah, that kind
type
of thing.
Horses?
If he'll bring it out there, I told him I will get out my tuxedo and top hat and ride it around the executive producer, which should be one heck of a picture.
Are you going to have anybody, a videographer or something?
Yeah. Well, we got independent filmmakers. And
great, great. Because it sounds like something that needs a record.
I think so,
official
record. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as we get into actually doing things, and we're getting to that now, the big heavy publicity is due to hit the 1st of January. Mm-hmm. Actually, the 2nd, because the 1st is Sunday, and you don't start publicity on Sunday. But we're going to start filming the meetings and some of the things, and maybe even have a blooper reel.
Create a bit of a documentary. Good.
Yeah, so it's going to be
fun.
Get it
on YouTube and Vimeo and all that stuff.
Yes, that's it.
Oh, why not? I mean,
because this is a huge thing. That's
it's going to be quite an event. And
good. Well, back to tombstones.
I just hope this ain't my tombstone.
Now we've spent all that time above ground. Let's go back below.
Below ground, yes.
I thought meeting Henry King years ago was pretty fascinating when he came out with this book. I think I met him in 91. Don't even know
and
if
that's Tar Heel Tombstones.
Tar Heel Tombstones King. And the Tales They Tell by Henry King. So if you, it's full of fascinating information.
And this is all actual and legitimate. And
absolutely, yeah. He's actually from, I believe, Pennsylvania originally, but he moved to the South, and he went and really, it's really well written, mm-hmm. and went and pursued and just looked all around North Carolina to find these unusual tombstones.
Because I once, many, 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 many years ago, had a little book called Comic Epitaphs from the Very Best Graveyards. I don't know where the book is now. If you know, maybe I gave it away or lost it or whatever, but they were... Not some were authentic and some were had been played with a little
manufactured or created. Or yeah, created. This would be a good idea in here. Boom.
Yeah, right.
Now he actually
it
makes
was funny, but it's nice to know that when you're reading something like that, that it's actual.
Yes, and he makes reference to tombstones all across the mm-hmm. states, but mm-hmm. primarily his focus is on the Carolinas. He even has Tom Dooley in there.
When did that book come out?
Around 1991.
Okay,
I think so.
Tom Dooley. Actually, it was Dula.
D-U-L-A. Oh, Dula, yeah.
Yeah,
you told me that.
The actual name.
Tom Dooley, actually, or Dula. I remember hearing songs, the song, Hang Down Your Head, Tom Dooley, mm-hmm. when it went out by the Kingston Trio yep. growing up in South Africa.
Right. Really?
Yeah. That yeah. used to be one of my favorite records to listen uh-huh. to. The image of a man hanging. I have no idea why that bore any fascination to a child, but I guess it's unusual enough to catch your attention.
Yeah.
But it's a true story. I mean, that really did happen. They changed the names a little bit to make them more rhythmic and rhyming right. for the song.
And Tom Dooley, as you say, actually reconciled himself with his own death, even though he felt he was unfairly being condemned to death. But he said, obviously, I've done something to get me here, and reconciled himself with that as an element of his guilt.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
And then they probably buried him someplace and took up more real estate.
Yeah. Right, and then there are places where separate limbs are buried in separate places of certain people.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people buried in the unmarked grave.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you get up into the mountains, and nature takes over.
Well, no doubt, as nature should, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's actually Islamic tradition is the unmarked grave. You just mm-hmm. Within 24 hours, the body has to be in the ground, and you don't mark it. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons why. What's his name? Not Saddam, the other one. We just dumped him in the ocean, and that was because.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah, that was part of it. It was done respectfully and properly.
The
how quickly
the big
we forget.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm
the Al Qaeda guy.
Oh yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yes.
Hopefully they do.
See,
we can't think of it. We have
Bin Laden.
A brain.
You.
There we go.
I should remember that because you put a little Y in there and it's Bin Laden.
Yeah, right. Well, he's been.
Ah. Should we investigate you?
Oh, go ahead, Troy. I've often, you know, I can understand that where people are concerned with privacy and particularly protecting things like your bank accounts.
Oh yes.
But
well, no, wait a minute. There's an oxymoron in that statement somewhere. Protecting things like your bank accounts when they're the bloody ones robbing us?
Well, no, what I'm thinking of is having people have unauthorized access, like
yes, no, I know
like
what
that.
You're saying. I just had to bring that up.
Yes.
No, all the bank robbers in the world put together didn't rob us for as much as our own banks did. So,
Well,
that's my plug for today.
What I was going is the privacy thing is if you want to investigate me, if you want to eavesdrop on my phone conversations, I don't really give a royal.
No, I really don't
either.
If
that's all you've got to do,
yep. Yeah.
Then you know you're going to be bored to death.
Now, yeah, right. bringing this back on topic, should we now talk about grave robbing?
And I used to think dictator was a potato. Grave robbing, absolutely, yes. Yeah. Let's get to the fun part, yes.
Yeah. Now, isn't that how they made
Where are my bones?
Stone?
Yeah, that's
they
right.
They went and got the bones. I
made
mean, got
out
the
of
parts,
bits and pieces.
You know.
Actually, who is it? Was it Robert Louis Stevenson? Or who was the author that had a lot of fun with that? Rudyard Kipling. Robert Louis Stevenson, I think. He had fun with grave robbers in his stories.
Oh, with
stories.
Grave robbers in his stories. I was thinking he had fun with Frankenstein.
Well, no. Grave robbing was actually a big business in Victorian England because of, you know, people.
Yes, it was. Medical parts.
Right. That was the main reason for it. You
got your research.
Yes.
Yes,
from the body parts.
Yes,
you weren't allowed to actually do autopsies and cut people up. So.
Right. And so they actually exhumed them and got what they needed.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like you said, entire bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes just parts that they needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
out of courtesy, they left the rest.
Yeah, when Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein, that was part of what she was thinking about and reanimating the bodies. And I've always found that book fascinating because if you read the book and then see the movie, you see that they're two different, totally different plots.
I should read the book because I remember going to see the movie. I haven't read the book. And I went, my poor brother, I went to the movies when he was taking a friend, a girlfriend. And I was maybe 8 or 9, so he took me along with him on this thing. I got so involved with this movie and what was going on, and was so horrified by this monster Frankenstein that when he's in the burning building at the end,
yeah,
I should probably not tell these stories about myself, but I was out in the aisle of the theater yelling, "Kill him!" Maybe I was 6. Let's make me a little bit younger.
There we go.
But
more forgivable age, shall we say.
A bloodthirsty time.
Oh, I can see.
I could get very involved. I mean, I remember another story, and this has nothing to do with graveyards, but very quickly I went to see the Phantom of the Opera.
Mm-hmm.
And from the moment that the acid was, this old movie, I think it was.
Oh, yeah, I know. One of Ray Bradbury's favorite. Yeah.
That the moment the acid got thrown in this poor guy's face and the noise, the sounds that he made, I started to cry. I cried so much through the whole movie that Usher came down and wanted to know if we should leave.
Oh, no.
I just totally tore my heart apart. I was really very susceptible to film.
Yeah. I think film is a bigger influence than most of us realize when you consider the time we spend looking at film.
Yes. Yeah. It's just like it totally wrapped up.
Yeah, that's it. Anyway. But if you've never read the book, Frankenstein, nothing. The only relationship between the book and the movie is the name and the fact that a man is made out of bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm. I regret to say that I have not read the book.
I haven't either.
I remember having to make a trip to Geneva. I used to be part of the U.S. delegation of the U.N. Mm-hmm. I was going to be in Geneva for an extended period, so I bought the book and I went there because that's where they were. And I found a little tavern with a nice outdoor court, and I would hang out there when I had my free time and read the book. And
well, give us the gist of the difference then.
Well, the difference is that it's not done.
We're going back above ground for a moment, folks.
Yeah, it's
but with bits and pieces of below.
Absolutely.
The monster is not this in the actual book is not this totally unfeeling, unintelligent monster. He has feelings. He can talk. It's not done in a castle with lights and lightning flashing about and all the
stuff. Is it more like the most recent one they did with Robert De Niro, where he played a bit more of a humane
character? Yeah, a lot more like that.
I thought that was, out of all of that I've seen, that's the one I like the most with De Niro.
And you know, Frankenstein is almost he's putting this together in his apartments, and it's the version
Kenneth Branagh directed.
Right.
Okay, I didn't see that.
It's gorgeous. And it's, you know, he's almost living with this thing, and it begins to prey on his mind and all, and then the monster goes off up Mont Blanc to live in the on the glacier up there in the end, and
he wants nothing to do with man.
Yeah, because man has never been good to him.
Ultimately, that was the statement. Yeah,
yeah, it's a very, very different type of film. Yeah, the Boris Karloff version, that's fantasy.
Created for entertainment.
The whole thing is really a fantasy.
Or recreated,
for little kids,
right?
And make
of course,
them scream in the movie theater.
yeah. So
I remember what really got to me as a kid growing up, and you know, exchanging bottles, Coke bottles, Pepsi bottles for money and going to see movies in South Africa was the vampire movies. They're the ones that got me. Christopher Lee and those. For some reason, that the vampires always got to me.
The Dracula book, the novel, now that I read.
Yes, Bram Stoker.
And that literally also scary to death. I mean,
What's even more scary is what inspired that book.
Vlad the Impaler. Yes.
Well, yeah, but maybe that's a way to take care of your graveyard issue. If we have undead, then they don't need to be buried.
Are you saying we need more vampires?
Well, they just need a handful of dirt, and they carry that around a little sack.
Okay, and then stay out of the sun. Maybe it's all the new vampire movies that are out now.
Okay, everybody, here's the deal. Get rid of your cloves of garlic and those crosses you got in your back pocket and just walk around more freely.
There you go.
That's the idea. We get things cleaned up around here.
Yeah. Of course, the best vampire movie is Once Bitten. I forget what the name.
Once
it
Bitten,
was, no.
Twice Shy.
Yeah, I was the George Harrison.
You've obviously had your grand manier.
And when they're bringing the coffin through customs, and his Igor or whatever his name is there, and the customs man says, "Well, we got to open it." He says, "Yeah, who's in it?" He says, "Well, that's my master, or my cousin, or something like that. He was mauled by a lion in Africa. We found at least 9 major pieces. Would you like to see?" "No, that's all right. Send it through." So that's how they got the coffin into the U.S.
Oh, she's okay. They say the truth is always stranger than fiction, yeah. And there's absolutely no doubt about that.
Yeah, it's a comedy vampire movie. It was done well.
Okay.
Including, you know, when...
What was it? The Anne Rice books that are out, came out, like, started...
Yeah, and she actually turned in a Christian direction toward the end of that, and her last book in that regard was the story of Christ. Mm-hmm. She went and explored that. Mm-hmm.
So
interesting how
more vampires, less real estate needed for graveyards, and that takes care of your problem, doesn't it?
Yes, and go back to, you know, sushi on the buffet table, thank you.
There you go. Yeah.
Just to throw that in.
Or we could do the Soylent Green trip.
Oh, that.
You know, boil
it's
it
people.
Down. Yeah. Well, you don't need to bury them that way. You know?
Aren't you glad you're listening right. out there, people?
We're trying to economize on graves here and coming up with all sorts of notions.
Yeah, there's all kinds of ways we can do this here, and we can make this happen.
But we really do wish you folks a Merry Christmas out there, and the true joys of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is this part of the joys of the season?
Well, we're sort of going beneath that surface for a while, but we are coming back up. Pretty much.
Yeah. Someday we got to do Christmas traditions and really get everybody mad at
us. At some point, well, actually, the next Halloween show we do, I think I want to pick out some old Halloween recordings.
We should just take this one, and we've got it recorded.
Yeah,
and
just run it.
Take snippets and add it to funky Halloween music.
Yes.
The Graveyard Smash.
Uh-huh. What are we going to do for Valentine's Day?
Yeah, what gory, ugly things?
We got hearts and stuff. You know.
Yes, what can we do?
We can talk about Aztecs ripping out live hearts or something. I don't know.
Right. Yes, that sort of drops me off.
Maybe we need to make some New Year's resolutions or something.
Not yet. We're not there yet.
Why?
I want to hear what everybody else is doing first and then go the other way.
Yeah, well, my resolution is to just be the same way I am.
Uh-oh.
You're in trouble.
But more of it, right?
There you have it.
Definitely more of it. We got to do more of this.
But, indeed. Well, we wanted to touch on the matter of... Oh, John Paul is here. He's coming up next. Come on in, John Paul.
Happy holidays.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, 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 ho.
That was him. And he does have a beard.
Yeah.
What's going on, bro?
It's not long and white enough, though.
Well, just doing the show. Got Occupy Chapel Hill coming on today again. I've had them on for the last several weeks, and they're giving us lots of interesting insights into what's going on down there. Right. And I'm giving lots of comments about what they have to say, and not to mention everything else that I comment on, which is almost unbounded.
Yes.
Well, they're a group that I very much support as well, and at some point I'm going to dig up some people to bring them on my show that are part of this movement. I'm really glad to see this movement. I know it's still in a process of emerging, but I am very pleased to see that a movement is about.
Yeah, it remains to be seen what's going to happen, but it's at least something going on.
Yes.
And it doesn't seem to be contrived by the political elite. So that's a good thing, hopefully.
Almost like the groundswell we had in the late 60s.
It's almost, yeah, it has something like that, although there's aspects of it that I'm not really too happy with, but still.
Well, it seems more publicly accepted as well this time.
A bit, yes.
Yeah.
But, of course, that's what scares me, is when the media actually starts covering something that tends to mean it's being co-opted.
It's probably the fat cat's way of trying to get an edge in, but they haven't quite figured it out yet.
You're just never happy unless you're underground. And underground is what we're talking about today.
Yeah, okay.
We've been underground all morning. That's
it. Well, let's hope that's just underground figuratively.
We'd like to think so. Otherwise, we'll just put the banks there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love to do Occupy.
Thanks, John Paul.
I'd love to do Occupy Apex sometime, but I think it'd just take five people and one sign, just walk down Salem Street, and it's all over.
You're occupied. You're done.
Yeah, that's it. So,
well, we're occupying radio.
Yes, we are, actually. Yes. We are occupying WCOM, and we'd be very pleased for any donations you have to make to support this lovely little pirate radio, I like to call it.
Well, it's not pirate radio.
I know it's
not.
We
have graduated from pirate radio to community radio.
Yes, we have.
Because this is the kind of community that supports...
Pirate radio only in the sense of freedom of expression, because that's essentially the respectful side of what pirate radio was known for, that these guys are going to come out and tell it like it is.
Right, and then run away. See, and we're here to stay.
And we're stuck. This thing doesn't float.
And we're in a kind of community that will stand up and talk. and will stand up and make their declarations.
I agree.
And not run away. To stand in front of whatever is out there and say, this is what we believe. We're staying here, and we're going to keep saying it. I mean, that's when you...
And we need your support so that we can stay.
And because we are broadcast around the globe and so on and so forth, can be heard anywhere in this country and out.
We're heard all over the world, yes.
Is there are community radios all over. And this is a plea not just for us. Of course it is for us too. But support your community radio.
And really more and more people I find just by correspondences that I get are looking for voices and radio stations that are not corporate, that do not have corporate speak.
So you support your community radio, you support your independent booksellers, you support your local businesses, because the dollar you spend with a local business stays in the community a heck of a lot longer.
Keep it at home.
Yes.
Support your local arts councils.
Absolutely.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely.
Yes, indeed. Well, at this point, we're close to bringing it to a wrap, so you might as well find some music you're going to put on there, Audrey. While Bob, why don't you give us the Apex Arts Council sign-off there with anything you might like to mention
well,
from
the,
that?
Well, the only other thing, I mean, I've talked about Artists for Animals. That's the big thing. But
that's
I do have one other show, one other art show we'll have coming up. What are you looking at?
No, go ahead. You keep on going. I'll send you a note.
Okay. And that's one that we're going to do the end of January and first week of February, and that's Valentine's and Romance Art.
And
we have that coming up, and you know that's going to be a fun thing. We'll hang up some art. You can buy your honey a piece of art. She'll think you're sensitive. And
hey.
Oh my God! And we also got a new feature going on the website. We have now art reviews and film reviews and all sorts of things from the inimitable Claudio himself. Signature that's art and film reviews.
That's the button.
That's it. And
I'm having fun doing those.
Oh yeah! Click on that. And you'll find here some things. You start out with a film film about his well, it's
Ghost in the Darkness was the original one.
Yep. That's the one there. The talks about Africa, and he can throw some stuff in. And
yes.
We got another one about the Rusty Bucket Kids. That's a good one there. That he and I were both in.
That's
actually.
Right. And you pasted a conductor shot of me on
beautiful
it,
so. Picture of the conductor there, and a few poems and things. And I know the executive producer is out there probably listening right now, and he should go and check it out on the website and see what that looks like. And I know you're going to do more, and maybe even we'll get a book review from Audrey on there. So. Day.
I was just thinking about that.
Indeed.
Yeah.
No
I'm just trying
to
get myself to actually write longer reviews, and I do my little snippets of my podcast.
Yeah. You remember back in school when the teacher wanted you to do a book report? Well, isn't that just the same
That's
thing?
That's kind of what's happening here.
You want to ramp it up a bit.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, folks, we want to wrap it up so that John Paul can have time to slip in here. Thanks for tuning us in once again at the Speakeasy and not switching us off, for those of you that haven't. And... We look forward to you joining us again next week. Until next time, this is Claudio at the Speakeasy signing off. Cheers.